you for downloading this podcast from Sound of Science. Lionel is a VW campervan, but inspired by the words and works of Carl Sagan, Lionel is the spaceship of our imagination. He likes to take people to the edge of the known universe, but before they go, we like to chat to them about music, life and science while we share a delicious pudding. This is Dessert Lionel Discs.
Lionel's passenger today is Dr. Janice Callister, who's a scientist researching dementia. Hello, Janice.
Hello.
What aspect of that are you looking at?
I'm studying a particular gene which we know is affected in some people who get dementia. It's a kind of frontotemporal dementia. It's not quite the same as Alzheimer's disease, where people have the classical, you know, they don't remember where they are or something like that. It's
right.
More of language deficits and strange behaviour kind of dementia.
Okay.
And so I'm looking into a gene which we know is affected, but I'm interested in the product of that gene.
Yeah.
And in this case, the protein.
Right.
And what that interacts with and how it causes problems and how it works in unaffected people.
What does that mean when you go into work tomorrow morning? What do you start doing?
Well, tomorrow morning I'll probably go in and make sure that my cells are all happy, that I grow in a dish, the human cells, for, which have been growing for a very long time in culture dishes. They're usually from various cancers that people have had, and because cells don't usually like to grow in dishes,
yeah.
Obviously. But they are a reasonable model for what we want to do, to look at the way that proteins interact. So I might spin those cells down so that I can get them all together and give them a good mash-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then remove all the DNA and all those things and just take the proteins out.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can separate them on a gel and look what happens to progranulin, which is the protein that I'm interested in different situations when I do different things to it, like give it insulin, for example, or,
mm-hmm.
Or maybe starve the cell of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's about it.
And in an ideal world, what would you hope to see?
I'd hope to see, for example, we do a procedure where you can find things that are attached to the protein. And I'm actually looking at some changes to the protein which change just one single amino acid. An amino acid is obviously, it's a part of the protein. The protein is made entirely of amino acids, which are then modified in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And the sequence of all the different amino acids gives you different structures and shapes that the protein can do different things.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of progranulin, a lot of patients have been sequenced, and we know that there are mutations on the DNA level that cause one amino acid in the protein to be changed for another.
Mm-hmm.
So I would really like to find which of those changes mean changes in the protein. So if maybe the protein now doesn't bind something it should bind to,
mm-hmm.
that can take it to the right place in the cell, or if it now binds something extra that it didn't used to bind to. If I found one of those things, that would be really interesting, and it would also potentially be a target for drug therapy,
yeah.
That kind of things.
Okay. Forgive me if I'm wrong, but it seems quite a specific area that you're looking at, which is fairly
yes,
common.
Yes, yeah.
Would you call yourself a neuroscientist? Okay.
I work in the field of neuroscience.
Okay. And why do you hesitate?
Because I didn't train in neuroscience. Obviously, I've got background in biology. I did,
yeah.
Did an undergraduate in biological sciences.
Right.
But then my PhD was in cancer genetics.
Right.
In flies.
Okay.
So obviously now I'm working in neuronal systems,
yeah.
Mainly culture, and also brain samples from people who are generous enough to leave us their brains.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that can be described as doing neuroscience.
Yeah, it sounds like it to me. I'm interested to know what happened. You were doing your PhD. Was there a particular point in that where you thought, right, well, this is interesting, I'm going off into this direction? Or
yes, so I was doing a PhD looking for something that affected a known growth pathway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really important, but mm-hmm. for people who are interested, it was called Essex kinase, and it's part of the insulin signaling pathway.
Right.
And flies that don't have Essex kinase survive. They're not very happy, mm-hmm. but they are small, really small.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were looking for things that affected growth in Drosophila, mm-hmm. because we know that the insulin signaling pathway is also implicated in cancer, so you kind of extrapolate from there.
Mm-hmm.
And two of the candidate genes that I was really interested in from a screen we did came out to be genes that were important in terms of brain function and development. So I kind of got really interested in that, because when you have two genes, you don't know anything about them, but they've turned up in a screen,
mm-hmm.
a screen in this case, just you look at lots of different things and mm-hmm. you organise it so that you have a readout to pull out things that are interesting. That's mm-hmm. all it is.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it just happened that these two things were involved in brain function, and so I had to read a lot about those signal pathways in brain and about development of the brain, and I got interested. And okay. there's more work in mammalian and human, mouse and human systems.
Yeah.
So obviously more of the literature was there.
Yeah. So there wasn't a young lady growing up just next to Wigan thinking, one day I want to do what you do.
No, I wanted to, I was so torn between creative pursuits
mm-hmm.
and scientific pursuits. So mm-hmm. I was really torn between like arts
yeah.
and science.
Okay, you've got me on a bugbear. This, why is that seen as being a dichotomy that you can't do both?
It's not, apart from career wise, you're quite limited, especially at the time that I did my A levels.
Yeah.
When I walked in to Wigan Tech and said, I'd like to do biology, chemistry, art and French. And they looked at me and was like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah.
You know, why? Yeah. Why do you want to do those things?
Yeah.
You know, universities who accept you for sciences won't be really interested in your art degree.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it made perfect sense, because yeah. I thought, well, you know, I could end up working maybe in fashion, textiles, something mm-hmm. like that, where actually chemistry is really important, biology mm-hmm. arguably too, and mm-hmm. especially now, I think, you know, with the way technology works, that the sciences are, you know,
yeah.
more important, that they're kind of intercalated, and
yeah.
and with art as well. But then it was like, you know, career wise it's not a great choice,
yeah,
and science is always seen as something that you should go towards as a sensible option.
Okay.
But I loved them.
Yeah.
I had fantastic science teachers.
Right. That's
who
good.
Really inspiring and
yeah.
wonderful. And I stayed in touch with a few of them long after I left high school.
Yeah.
No. I think people who have got, scientists who've got a creative edge to them, they have a different way of looking at scientific problems, which I think can be very useful. I don't
yeah.
think everybody in the lab should be creative, and I don't think yeah. everybody in the lab should be purely scientific.
Yeah.
But a balance, I think, is really useful in the lab, because
yeah.
it's amazing the different kinds of backgrounds that encourage different ideas. And you know, I think.
And is that the reality in the lab? Is that there is that mix of?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Well, that's okay then.
Yeah. At least in my yeah, current lab.
Sure.
It's, yeah.
Great. So Lionel's going to take you to the edge of the known universe. And if you're going to go all that way, you're going to need some entertainment. You do get the complete works of Sir David Attenborough and Carl Sagan's Cosmos.
Fantastic.
The book. Have you read that?
Yes, I have.
Well, it's worth reading again.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, yeah. No.
Are you going to bring another book as well? Or?
Yeah, and it's another one that I've already read, so I don't think reading is.
Okay.
I don't think that's a problem.
Okay.
I did mention actually to Lionel that I was thinking about bringing Contact, but he said that he's already got one I can use.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
Fair enough.
Which is, you know, another wonderful book.
Is that true? Oh, here it is. Yes, absolutely. There we are. Well, I'm glad you sorted that out with him. How did you do that?
It was a while ago now. We talked about it ages ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is a brilliant book. Oh. He's got the film here as well. So
oh, has he?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah,
yes, so I can take that off the,
yeah.
off the list as well.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So that's on your film list?
Yeah, it's definitely in the short list.
Okay. Let's come to that later.
I'm going to have to decide as we go.
Yeah. No, it's fair so enough. No, yeah, it is hard to choose a film. Well, you could have two. Don't choose Contact, because it's already here.
Oh, I could have two.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be a lot easier.
But you can't have two more.
Oh, damn.
Because Contact's already here.
Anyway. Okay, all right. I have Contact plus one, is what you're saying.
Contact plus one.
All
yes.
Right, that's all right then. That's I can fine. Manage with that.
Yeah, and you've got Carl Sagan's Cosmos and the Book of Contact. This is amazing. It's perfect.
Okay. I'm not sure we need anything else, to be honest.
No,
I think we're fine.
Should we just stop now? No, you'll need some music.
Oh, yeah,
you'll need
some music. Yeah.
So, what music are you going to take
on? It's really, when you're making some choices with music, what you're going to bring on, I suppose that the first way your mind goes is you think of your earliest experiences of music, and some of my earliest experiences of music were being sat in the back of my dad's car with my big brother and sister in the back with me, and my mum and dad in the front, and ELO blaring out on my dad, tapping the side of the car if it was a sunny day on the outside, or maybe the wheel while he was driving, and the sound of it was so kind of, to me, strangely intergalactic wonderfulness, electronic and orchestral at the same time, and so inspiring, and I loved it. I could have sat in that car and driven for hours if my dad had listened to it. It was wonderful. It was like a pre-Lionel space experience. It felt like that. Songs are so kind of they kind of get deep in your head even when you're young. You don't have to be an adult. I love them now as an adult, but as a kid I love them too. I think the songs that I liked were different. Like I loved Hold On Tight To Your Dreams. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a crazy electronic lullaby.
Yeah.
And I still find it quite soothing to listen to now and reassuring. You know, Mr. Blue Sky is so optimistic, and you know, if you're feeling bad, it's very difficult to listen to that song, and some of the lyrics are just beautiful and poetic, and I like that.
So you're driving along in the back of your dad's car.
Yes.
Must be quite a big car with the...
It was probably a Sierra.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm really picturing this outside Wigan in a Sierra listening to ELO and dreaming about the universe. You're about to go off. In reality now, I bet you never thought that was going to happen, did you?
No, who knew?
Yeah. It's going to take you to the edge of the known universe and back.
Yeah.
You'll probably understand that you'll be back for lunch, but it's going to take quite a while for you personally.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Which is why you're going to need these albums and books, even though you've read both of them already, and the film of Contact. But anyway, you're going to have to bring another film with you, so what is it?
Okay, so I'm going to take The Wrath of Khan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Which is...
Why? I know why, but why?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's a lot of reasons, but the first three that come to mind are that it's, you know, Khan! It's Khan.
Yes.
You've got to have Khan.
Yeah.
Two is because it's an awesome film.
Yeah. Good reason. Yeah.
That probably should have been one. And three is that without fail cry every time I watch it.
Okay.
It, like in a kind of, you know,
yeah,
beautiful way, you know, in a sad but beautiful way.
So how do you feel about the forthcoming Star Trek 2?
I'm very excited about it.
Okay.
I love the new Star Trek that came out with Chris Pine as Kirk, mm-hmm. which I didn't think I'd like. When I saw the images, you know, before it came out, I was like, oh, look at him, he's too young, and he's so American, and But it completely won me over.
Yeah,
and I know now that I can't trust any of my pre-film judgments, because I get it wrong in both ways so many times. I love Trek. I always love Trek.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go with it.
That's good. I don't know about you, but when I look up at the night sky, I've always thought there's an awful lot of life out there that we just don't know about yet. And I was reading something yesterday that said that by the latest estimates, there's something like 4.5 billion Earth-like planets in terms of temperature, and all that needs to be around brown dwarfs in our galaxy alone.
Right.
Which is pretty cool. That's
quite impressive, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going up in Lionel.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're going to go and have a look for some.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah.
If we're travelling, we're probably going to hear some alien music that's new.
Brilliant.
That'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
But just in case you don't.
Yeah.
I presume you've got a few more CDs with you.
I have, yeah. I'm really nervous about them because it's so hard. But yeah. And there's a tendency to overthink things and think, you know, I want to be represented by something which is incredibly hipster and mm-hmm. you know, tight.
Yeah.
But in fact, what I'm going to do is the opposite, and I'm going to go with Joshua Tree for the second album.
Okay.
Which is I know a lot of people dislike you too. I will have to say I'm not a massive fan these days.
Yeah.
But when I was a teenager,
yeah,
I loved the Joshua Tree. Yeah. And since we're going chronologically, we've gone from ELO, which is, you know, listening in the car with my dad, to listening on my tape player in my bedroom.
Yeah.
I've got to go to the Joshua Tree too. I found it really moving. I was thinking a lot about life and what life means, and I suppose the album is kind of an album of that kind of discovery as well for them. So, and some really beautiful music. I love One Tree Hill is a great song on the album. In God's Country is a great song. I never thought I'd like a song that's called In God's Country.
Yeah.
But but it's one of my favourites.
Okay.
It's a fantastic album. I find it incredibly moving, and you've got, you know, where the streets have no name, you just feel like you can go out and do anything if you listen to that. And you know, I could be cool and pretend that I don't like it. But who am I showing a kid?
Yeah.
You know, the aliens don't know that people don't like them.
Yeah.
It's fine. I can invite them in. They can have a listen. I'm sure they'd love it.
beard song.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you seen Nostalgia for the Light?
I have. Beautiful film. Absolutely. Very intense.
Yeah. Have you seen the DVD extras on it?
No.
Oh, you should. There's ones about politics which are not worth seeing unless you really want to upset yourself.
But there's yeah, I bet.
There's ones. There's a guy who's built this observatory in his back garden. And all the mod cons in there that you could possibly wish to imagine. But all, you know, like, he needed to raise his seat up, so he got the fan belt from a car and the wheel from a sewing machine and created a system to move his chair. It's absolutely beautiful.
Sounds ace.
Yeah, it's worth getting the DVD just for that. So, you made a comment there which I've got to go back to.
Okay.
And you said you never thought you'd like a song called In God's Country. I'm putting that together with the fact that you organise, along with some other people, the Greater Manchester Skeptics Group.
I think I probably worded it wrong, because I think at the time when I listened to In God's Country, I think I probably was a Christian.
Yes, okay.
But
what happened?
I don't think there was a particular moment.
No.
It was just something that I actually really wanted. I really wanted to be a Christian, to be a good Christian. I just never really felt it.
Okay.
So I was quite disturbed by that for a long time and tried to go out and find it. Didn't find it.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I liked still haven't found what I'm looking for as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's not a big deal to me that I don't believe in God.
No.
It's a big deal to other people sometimes.
Yeah.
Not so much in this country anymore, I have to say.
No, I don't think so.
I think the only time you have any trouble with it is when you have to consider people's feelings because they're religious.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because I used to be religious myself, and I know that from the religious point of view, somebody who doesn't believe in God can feel like just the fact that they don't can feel like an affront, if not an insult.
Yeah, exactly.
And it can make it very difficult.
Yeah.
But it seems like a completely alien concept when you're inside that belief system that I was in, that anybody who isn't within that belief system could be a good person. Of course, as soon as you come out of it, that's completely blown apart.
Yeah.
And you realise that is so wrong.
Yeah, of course.
But you, to empathise with those people who are, if you're talking to somebody who has that belief, and you know how good that makes them feel, you don't want to upset them by bringing it up and talking about it.
Exactly. So it can be difficult, usually with people that you care about a lot.
Yeah.
But I think I've settled into it now, because I think at the beginning you tend to be quite forthright in your opinion about it, because it's a new thing you've discovered and you want to talk about it, and maybe you want to be challenged on it as well.
Yeah.
Because it's a new thing for you, and there's nothing wrong with being challenged on things.
Yeah.
You know, you need to think about your stance. If you're going to have one,
yeah,
you should really consider it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I suppose I kind of say it quite offhand to people when we discuss stuff. You know, if someone brings up going to a christening or something along those lines, I'll say, well, you know, I'm an atheist, but I'll go along to your day if that's what you'd like me to do, because I care about you. But it doesn't have to be a big deal, and it's not like, you know, I won't make a stance and say, oh, I'm not standing, I'm not going to go to a church.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But it doesn't play a role in my life, and that's kind of there is to it, really.
Yeah.
I don't think all skeptics are non-believers like I am.
No, of course not.
But I do think there's a big crossover there.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I suppose if you look at it more as, you know, if you're really into films and you went to a film critics meetup, then you're more likely to meet people who you've got the common ground with. You've got an immediate thing that you can talk about, which is always important when you meet new people.
Yeah.
So you've got something in common. And I think skeptics are the same. You're going to meet people who also don't like to take necessarily, you know, people's word for it when they're giving, you know, skin creams or, you know, vitamins or whatever it is that particular thing they're talking about, or, you know, it's diner schools or acupuncture.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be against all those things. It just means that you have to have an open mind, and if you go there, be willing to discuss those things with other people. And I think those people who go have that in common. Yeah. So they become friends.
Absolutely. So what sort of topics do are cover? I mean, you have talks and...
Jeff Whelan, who's the organiser now, actually did a talk for us on God versus the Law.
Oh, yes.
Which was very good, because that was actually... He's a barrister, and he was going through the legal aspects, some of the legal challenges involving religion, and how they've been responded to, and how the public and the press also respond to them, which is really interesting. Mm. And the subjects are just... As long as you can think of a subject, there's a way you can be sceptical about it. So you can pretty much have anything and discuss it, I think.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a talk on homeopathy, we've had a talk on Voodoo Histories, which is about conspiracy theories with David Aronovich.
Right, great.
He talked about that book. And we also had somebody giving a talk on the psychology behind conspiracy theories, like why people believe in conspiracy, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, no,
we had some people who were 9/11 truthers who came along to that.
Okay.
And that was interesting. Climate change. I have to say that in general, the sceptical community, of course, is not generally not climate sceptics.
Yes.
Which
it's a different use of the word.
Yeah, it's a different use of the word. So, I think I prefer climate change denier.
Yes, they don't.
No, funny that, isn't it? Yeah.
No, yeah. But you know, people are wrong, and that's fine.
Yeah. It's good to admit you're wrong.
It's really good to admit you're wrong. I know there's an event being organised by the Wellcome Trust, which is going to happen in May in London, which is all about being wrong.
Yeah.
That's worth going to see.
I know that with politicians it's seen as a very bad thing, as seeing as, you know, oh, you've done a U-turn, you can't make your mind up, it's seen as indecisive.
Yeah.
But I think actually if it's the right thing, you should do it anyway.
Absolutely. If you put a policy out there and all the people who do the job tell you that it's wrong, then you've got to listen to them. You have to.
Definitely.
Even if the lady's not for turning. Aside from listening to the Joshua Tree on those tapes, there must have been quite a few tapes back then. Are you taking any of those with you as well?
Tapes?
Well, not the tapes, but the music. You can't play a tape here. It's a CD player.
It's okay. I've got a special converter.
Oh, okay. Brilliant.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Fantastic. So is your next choice a tape as well?
The next choice? Yeah, actually, next choice stems from a mixtape.
Okay.
It is an album, but it stems from a mixtape that my brother made for me when I was a teenager. Okay. And my best friend, Laura, and I used to listen to this tape. It had lots of things on it, like it had Pixies, Hey, and it had Nirvana, and it had Bauhaus and the Sundays and Red Hot Chili Peppers and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
it was fantastic. I love that tape.
Yeah.
I've still got it. The song I'd probably choose to take, well, the album, sorry, I'd probably choose to take, it's a tough one with Laura because I always want to take Pulp.
Okay.
But Laura and I, we really enjoyed the Pixies together a lot as teenagers, and we kind of discovered them at the same time through listening to these tapes from Neil. So I think I'd take Doolittle by the Pixies, which is a fantastic album. It's very varied, and there's a song on it called The Baser, which they used to play at Wigan Pier on Wednesday nights.
Okay. Were you a regular?
Nights. Yes, I was.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Laura and I would dance to that,
amongst
many other things.
Yeah.
But there are so many songs that remind me of her, and that is one of them.
You can take luxury items. Have you brought one along?
Yes, I have. It's funny actually, because I think from the outside you wouldn't think it was a luxury, because it's usually kept in a cardboard box in the spare room on the shelf, because I haven't got around to doing anything with it.
Okay.
It is a cuckoo clock.
Oh.
And I'm very attached to this cuckoo clock.
Yeah.
For several reasons.
Okay.
Which will become clear, I hope.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah.
But I think my cuckoo clock would be a great luxury item to take. Because, one, it reminds me of my time in Switzerland. They're made in the Black Forest, actually, not Switzerland. But it reminds me of the time I was there.
Okay.
But my nan and granddad used to own this cuckoo clock.
Yeah.
It used to be in their house when I was a little girl. On the hour, it used to cuckoo. And if I remember rightly, the little bird, and it was called Billy,
mm-hmm.
probably after Billy Butler from Radio Merseyside.
Okay.
I'm going to guess.
Yeah.
Which was always on at my nan and granddad's house because they're Scousers.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very steady thing. You know, it was always there. It was reliable. It always went off. I was always happy when I heard it. And the thing I love about it, and the reason I'd want to take it, is I think it's a beautiful thing to represent the earth.
Okay.
Because, you know, if you're going to be meeting people,
mm-hmm.
I know it doesn't seem like a luxury, it's a clock, you know, mm-hmm. it's mechanical.
Yeah.
The mechanical side of it is beautiful. I think that you can see about humans a little bit about the mechanics of a clock.
Yeah.
The outside, the casing is quite humble but beautiful as well. And of course, it's made out of wood and it's carved.
Yeah.
The bird, oh God, I love birds.
Yeah.
Birds are just beautiful. Yeah. I'm just addicted to anything with birds on it.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're incredible, and there's something about the cuckoo clock bird which is so kind of frivolous and a little bit daft in a really cute way that I just think it's a good representative of us, you know. We're a little bit fun, we're a little bit imaginative, you can make things that work with our hands, you know. You don't need a computer to do that. Someone actually made that thing, you know, however long ago.
Yeah.
You know, and it belonged to my beloved grandparents. You know.
Brilliant. So you said you were in Switzerland. Is that where you did your PhD?
Yes.
How
that's
did
right.
that come about?
I saw the job online. Okay. It was a PhD studentship in English, and it was quite competitive, so I didn't think there was any chance I'd get it. I'd just finished my undergrad at Salford.
Right.
So I applied, and strangely enough, they invited me over for an interview, which was a wonderful 3 days. I completely fell in love with Basel. After that, it seemed daft to say no.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. I imagine you jumped at the chance to be over there for a while.
And it was great, and it was terrible, and it was scary, and it was wonderful, and everything. So.
It was almost like life in that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there any music from around that time that you'd like to take with you?
No, probably not.
Okay.
Because although there's a lot of music there that I like, a lot of it's to do with kind of, I think, surviving the time that I had it. You know, it's...
Okay.
And I think that travelling the universe was such a beautiful experience. I don't think I'll need to be buffered through it.
No,
do you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
So I feel like, although I love that music and it's got a special place in my heart, I don't think it's the right music.
Okay, so what are you doing?
So I'm going to move right on to Edith Piaf, who I adore.
Mm.
And I found the longest available best of Edith Piaf.
Brilliant.
And I've brought that with me.
Fantastic.
To listen to, so it lasts a really long time. I love the sound, it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
Voice incredible. And as a special bonus, it'll make me feel like Mostyn's with me a little bit, because I walked down the aisle to La Vie en Rose.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui pour moi, moi pour lui dans la vie.
des nuits d'amour à plus finir, un grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, en mourir.
Is your husband a scientist?
My husband's a linguist.
Is he?
Yes.
He's not really a scientist then, is he?
There's great debate about this.
Yeah.
He's doing a master's at the moment, and then he'll be doing his PhD straight after.
Okay.
So it's an MA though, not an MSc.
Okay.
But I do think there's so much in linguistics which is science that it seems. But you know, maybe they're bridging that gap between the arts, the humanities, and the science, all of them at once.
Absolutely. Maybe there's a podcast there. Maybe I shall invite him here and see if he can persuade me that he's sciencey enough to go.
I think that's a really good idea.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Then. It's an amazing subject of which I knew nothing about until I met him.
Yeah.
And now I'm absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a really fantastic subject.
Dès que je t'aperçois, alors je sens dans moi mon cœur qui bat.
It's getting late, it's getting cold, and we should probably get you out there. You're about to begin a journey through the cosmos. But before you go, you're going to need some food. Did you bring a pudding with you?
I've brought with me a delicious dark chocolate and pear tart.
Wow.
A la Française.
Fantastic. Let's dig in. Excellent tart. By the way, you have a podcast, don't you?
I do have a podcast. It's called Just Skeptics.
Okay.
It's a production of the Great Manchester Skeptic Society.
Great.
And it's available on iTunes. It's basically, we talk about usually current events that are interesting for us in terms of skepticism. So the most recent episode, I discussed some dubious claims made from actual real research on breast cancer, which is really interesting, but been taken a bit too far by the media.
Okay.
So there's
what a surprise.
Yeah, I know. Who knew? Who knew? So I talked to the researcher who did the work and got to the bottom of that. And so we cover just pretty much anything.
Mm.
And we usually have a soapbox on as well, where someone who's not one of the regulars will come on and have a rant about something.
Yeah.
The last one was Jolie from Greater Manchester Skeptics, who was talking about The Secret, which she has a particular dislike of.
Yeah.
Where, you know,
presumably because she's read it.
Yes, yeah. The idea that somehow you're wholly responsible for what happens to you, good or bad, because of your way of thinking.
Yeah.
Seems a little bit cruel.
Yes, quite.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, what piece of music are you going to listen to as you take off?
Well, I think the most appropriate that I can possibly think of would be The Flaming Lips.
Fantastic.
Shimi Battles the Pink Robots.
Brilliant.
And of course the song would have to be Do You Realise?
Yeah.
I went to see The Flaming Lips at Jodrell Bank. It was a fantastic concert.
Yeah. Amazing.
I'd just come back from my honeymoon. My husband and I went together. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
The Flaming Lips are incredible, and the song is just pretty much the answer to any problems.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And I think with the expectation of travel and all the beautiful things I'm going to see,
yeah,
I think it's the perfect song to leave on.
It is, absolutely. And I'll leave you to it. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.